Well, thank you very much for that introduction, and let me first add my regular but very heartfelt thank you to Bill Campbell and John Wilson and to all of you for what for me has been a triple treat of a weekend. As always, I've enjoyed the meetings, I got a lot out of them, but I'm also honored to have been invited as a member of the society. And finally, this opportunity, thank you for this opportunity to add my voice to ongoing proceedings of the society. Henry David Thoreau once reflected, "In any weather, at any hour of the day or night, I have been anxious to improve the nick of time and notch it on my stick too, to stand on the meeting of two eternities, the past and the future, which is precisely the present moment, to toe that line." These poetic words capture two important aspects of the American conservative movement at this time as we look forward to the 21st century. For at the present moment, we indeed stand on the meeting of two eternities, the past and the future. Not only as human beings do we stand on the cusp of the third millennium, but as conservatives and defenders of freedom, we stand between, on the one hand, a past filled with victories over fascism, communism, and the forsaken promise of the welfare state, and on the other hand, a future of potential and great hope for the reinvigoration of American society. We as conservatives have stood together against the inherent coercion and manifest evil of fascism. We have stood together against communism wherever it has appeared around the globe. We have stood together against the destruction of civil institutions and the squashing of freedom left by the welfare state. And we have prevailed over all of these forces. But now we are left with a void. We are left with a scarred landscape created by state coercion and leftist ideas. Now, through this process, we have brought with us the public that has come to understand the failure of the welfare state, the evil of fascism, and the void promises of centrally planned economies. They have supported us in the destruction of these evil forces. But they, and to a certain extent, we too, are understandably a bit anxious. Think about it. For the past 40 years, Americans have been depending on the government to solve many of their problems from the cradle to the grave. When you're born, you're immediately issued a Social Security number. We enter state-sponsored schools in many cases, eat state-sponsored school lunches, go to after-school state-sponsored or federally sponsored programs. We enter college, many of us dependent on student loans from the federal government. When we graduate, we enter a workforce where sometimes we're dependent, or I shouldn't say dependent, but sometimes we're buoyed up, quote-unquote buoyed up, by the minimum wage. We have unemployment insurance there for us. We buy our house many times subsidized by Fannie Mae. We get married and endure the marriage penalty. We move through our careers. We move up the progressive tax scale. We get our food through ag subsidies. We get many of our goods with trade barriers. Then we retire to Medicare and Social Security. We are in many ways, we have been in many ways, like children riding a merry-go-round. At times it was a fun ride, a carefree ride, an unbridled, optimistic ride as it was presented to us. And now as we step off, we're a bit dizzy. And we need something to grab hold of. Now that we as conservatives have convinced the American people to step off of that merry-go-round of government dependence, the task of the conservative movement is to provide something for Americans to hold on to. To do this requires that we move from our traditionally negative stances to a positive mission. In short, we must explain what we mean when we say America should be a nation of free and secure individuals living in the civil society under the laws of nature and nature's God, in which peace and prosperity flourish. As Thoreau said, our mission is not only to notch the passage of time, but to improve the nick of time. Now, such a mission of moving from basically a negative stance to a positive one is at the same time uncomfortable and comfortable for conservatives. It is uncomfortable because to be active and positive requires an agenda, a positive creative vision, and at first blush, what may be considered an ideology. And this is precisely what many thinkers in our tradition have warned against. Russell Kirk reminds us in The Conservative Mind that conservatism is a negation of ideology. Ideology is an attempt to govern all life by political slogans, while American conservatives believe that no mere political formulas can make a people content. Murray Rothbard, in his self-described manifesto for New Liberty, writes, "On the contrary, the libertarian sees his own position as virtually the only consistent one, consistent on behalf of the liberty of the individual." In this passage, Rothbard seems to be implying that any projection of one's own position or beliefs is to be strictly avoided as a course of act and inconsistent with liberty. But remember, these warnings came during an era when the temptation was for us to jump onto that false merry-go-round of politics. Warnings such as those from Kirk and Rothbard were warnings against political ideology, political slogans, and political visions. And positive political action, except in the very rare case of unanimity, must always and necessarily lead to coercion over others. Today, however, we are not on the merry-go-round of politics. What is needed is action in the social arena. That is action within society, among men and women as individuals, and action. What is needed is action in the social arena. That is action within society, among men and women as individuals. And action in this realm must always and necessarily require the action of free will. Remember, too, that Kirk and Rothbard follow these stern warnings against political ideology and political action with equally strong and positive statements of belief in social action. Kirk, for his part, two paragraphs later, catalogs his six canons of conservative thought. Among these were number two, affection for the proliferation, variety, and mystery of human existence, which he supports by ascribing to conservatism a sense that life is worth living. And canon number six, that while recognizing that change may not be salutary reform, society must alter, for prudent change is the means of social preservation. And recall also Kirk's lecture directed at young people entitled "May the Rising Generation Redeem the Tide," in which he nearly shouts, as nearly as Mr. Kirk would want to shout, "Redeem the time, redeem the dream." Rothbard, for his part, concludes For a New Liberty with an epilogue entitled "A Strategy for Liberty," and goes so far as to observe, "Since the state will not gracefully convert itself out of power, other means than education, means of pressure, will have to be used." It was Richard Weaver who recognized that the world is intelligible and ideas have consequences. Consequences through the human action they inspire. Classical liberals in the lineage of Adam Ferguson have always understood that while not by human design, indeed through human action is social order maintained. Ludwig Mises reminds us again and again in the pages of Human Action that human action is purposeful behavior. Milton and Rose Friedman titled their self-described personal statement, "Free to choose, a very active verb. Frank Shadorov, who literally cringed at the idea of doing something about it, even had to admit that if I do a good job on myself in the way of improving my fund of knowledge and my understanding and of maintaining a sense of responsibility towards my judgment, the result might strike the fancy of a fellow man. If he is activated by the example to go to work on himself, my personal effort will have bourgeoned into what we call social improvement." And Frank Meyer writes that conservatism needs to be more than preservative. Its function is to restore, and to do so by creating new forms and modes to express, in contemporary circumstances, the essential content of Western civilization. And so positive action in the social setting is completely natural and should be completely comfortable for conservatives and defenders of freedom. We recognize, yes, the fallibility of man, but we also recognize the basic goodness and value of the individual and family. It is our tradition that recognizes the ability of communities to conduct their own affairs without the interference or guidance of a state or an enlightened class of thinkers. Positive ideas and action on those ideas are our intellectual birthright and are within our intellectual camp. And we should not be afraid to act within the social sphere and join Thoreau and not just notching the passage of time, but improving its nick. Now to reach down into the ash heap of history and pick up a phrase from Lenin, since the Marxist won't be needed anymore, what is to be done? Having just spent last weekend in my garden, I ask your forbearance and bear with me as I use the analogy of the garden to explain what I think needs to be done. First, we must continue to weed the garden. Yes, I am saying that the basic mission is to move to a positive paradigm, but we must always be vigilant against illiberal encroachments within the political arena, in whatever forms or reincarnations these may take. We must be on the lookout for code words such as third way. We must be ever careful of regulations that, although they do not appear directly on the budget, interfere with the economy nonetheless. We must be on the lookout for quasi-government agencies that, under the mask of free economy, are actually new versions of command and control. We must be careful on our college campuses and continue to weed out illiberal programs, but we must also be positive on our campuses, offering positive alternative. And we must be watchful for what I've come to call the politically correct corporate culture. Second, we must enrich the soil. And here, we must be on the offensive with ideas and proposals. We must talk about, for example, how do free markets work to bring about civil interaction between men? We must explain how morality, even when practiced by the individual and on individual to individual level, spreads the civility that is a mark of our culture. We must talk about tax cuts as a matter of justice. We must talk about school choice as an opportunity rather than merely a solution. In every case, my point is that we need to come up with positive ideas, ideas that express a forward-looking vision. We must provide people with that steady hand when they're stepping off the dizzying merry-go-round that we've been on. Third, we must sow the seeds. We must establish and build the institutions of a free society. My sister is a teacher of fourth grade, and lately she's been out and about trying to find a bit more challenging of a school. And so I suggested that she start looking at the charter schools that are growing like crazy in Washington, D.C. And she went to an open house of one of these charter schools that is in a neighborhood that sorely needs charter schools and school choice. And she was amazed when she came back that these people in the community had the amount of energy that was instilled in this community. They had converted a school that had been abandoned by the D.C. public school systems. And they were literally spending all of their weekends and their evenings painting this building, getting it ready. And my sister said when the folks from the charter school system and these teachers came in, they were just ecstatic that somebody was taking an interest in them. These neighborhoods that have been decimated for the past 40 years by government policy are hungry for institutions of civil society. I think of the National Foundation for Teaching of Entrepreneurship and the great work that Steve Moriarty has done, and I think we need more of that. The work that the prison fellowships have done in a community that does not know of the institutions that we take for granted. Now finally, and I think most importantly, to cultivate this garden of freedom, we must nourish the seedlings. These new institutions that we are helping to seed need our spiritual and material support. We need to make sure that they get the marketing and the publicity that they deserve. Also, nourishing the seedlings requires something near and dear to my heart, which is educating and mobilizing the rising generation. We heard this weekend quite a bit about the demise of the curriculum in colleges. I can tell you from my own experience at the University of Notre Dame, that even though I felt very privileged that I was plugged into the movement through groups like ISI, it wasn't through my college courses that I learned about Mises or Hayek. They were never mentioned once, nor was Milton Friedman or the rest. We must realize that this generation, the generation that I am a part of, has not been getting these teachings through the regular courses. We must realize that when they graduate, there is no support system right now for young conservatives in their early career years, and we must provide that support system. Many of the activities that are required of us to ultimately succeed, as I've described them positively, are new to our movement, a movement that has been negative against communism, against the welfare state, necessarily so. But now we're at a void, and we need to change our mission. We need to become positive. Many of us are reluctant to boldly devise new ideas that require radical change for their implementation. Others of us are reluctant to act in a way that affects others around us. But both of these actions, positive thinking and active society cultivation, are necessary at this point. We must envision, articulate, and cultivate an America that is a nation of free and secure individuals living in a civil society under the laws of nature and nature's God, in which peace and prosperity flourish. In short, the mission of the conservative movement in the 21st century is to continue weeding the garden of illiberal ideologies, but to start and continue positively and actively enriching the soil with ideas, sowing the seeds of morality and empowerment among desolate communities, and nourishing the seedlings that are the rising generation in civil society.